This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest match report. This week saw Palace take on Sheffield United without a win all season, and the Eagles piled on the misery for Chris Wilder's men with a 2-0 victory. An early Jeff Schlupp strike put Palace one up before injury curtailed his match, but his replacement, Ebere Eze, scored a goal of the season contender to put the match safe in first half injury time.
The Match Report. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Right, I am Chris Hambling, as your host, not as always, but nearly as always, you know, quite regularly, I would say. And who usually stands in for me? It's Mike Scott. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
And we've also got, returning after a long, long time in exile for matters we just simply won't go into today, but he's been allowed back, it's Alex Penge.
Hello, good to be back. Feels like a long, long hiatus, like James Tomkins, but yeah, I'm back and better than ever.
Well, listen, let's just don't do it again. That's all I'm going to say. Well, that thing that you did, just don't do it again.
I won't do it again, don't worry. If we're talking about the right thing.
Anyway, low on news this week for our Palace news segment, so we'll very quickly dive into the little smatterings of rumours that we've got for you. The first is that Palace have been linked with the centre-back playing for Schalke. It's Ozan Kabak. So, amusingly, we're up against Liverpool, Man United and Leicester in that one, and they're talking about a £25 million fee for a 20-year-old centre-back playing in what's a struggling Schalke team, Alex?
Yeah, definitely. He's one of the shining lights of a really terrible side that's breaking records, all sorts, you know, breaking all sorts of records with, you know, losing streaks, and they're at the bottom of the table at the moment in the Bundesliga. But yeah, he's highly rated. Liverpool were after him, and we're looking at him quite a lot in December time when they had that period without, you know, with all their injuries at centre back. But I don't see it happening myself. I could see him, obviously, you know, looking at those bigger sides, and I don't see us forking out that big money that's been rumoured, and £25 million is a lot of money for us. So, yeah, don't think it's a goer.
No, but little doubt we do need younger players in the squad, and we certainly need to freshen it up at centre-back. And the second rumour, of course, at the moment, after James Tomkins was linked with West Brom, is now Mamadou Sakho being linked with a move to West Brom. His contract obviously expires in the summer. Now, Palace do have the option to trigger an extra year, but it will be on his existing wages, rumoured to be around £120,000 a week. So it seems extremely unlikely that a player who's not being picked and has been fit to play for quite some time, but very much out of favour with Roy, is being linked with a return to working with former manager Sam Allardyce. West Brom desperate, of course, but realistically, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, Mike, but I just look at Sakho's situation, and to me, it makes much more sense for him to run down the contract that he's currently got. Whether or not he would join West Brom till the end of the season for game time, surely that just risks injury, and he can't really pick his move later on. So what do you reckon?
the only way that he's going to get anything like the wages that he's on now is as a free agent, surely. And I mean, I don't know. You couldn't expect Allardyce to stick around if this is the first time that he doesn't keep a side up. And if he does manage to do it, it will be his greatest performance, because West Brom are shit.
They really are. Yeah, absolutely right. You know, still personally, I'm someone who still rates Sakho. Still think he's a tremendous footballer, yep. But I'm very much in the minority looking around social media and things
I'm
like that.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Christopher.
Yay. Alex, are you with us?
Yeah, definitely. In his pomp, he's probably up there as one of our best centre-backs ever in his pomp. That's a bit controversial, but I think when he was fully fit, he was great for us.
Well, there we go. All three Mama Sakho fans are on this podcast. Who would have thought it? Anyway, and last little bit for you up the front. We always like to say this, and that is make sure you visit all of our social media channels. Just search for Back of the Nest on all of them. We're there, apart from TikTok. We thought about it, but we're all old. That's the basic situation there.
That's a DR, yeah, but most thing, of, isn't it? That's a DR.
Well, even he hasn't gone that far. But he is on YouTube, fronting up our YouTube coverage. It's growing and growing all the time, as he likes to talk about, and he's absolutely right. There's a wonderful little community developing there, particularly for the watch-alongs. It does involve quite a lot of away fans as well, giving us grief throughout, and... yeah, DR was telling me off for reacting this week, but I can't help it. I just find it fun. And I'm boring people I don't like, so I have a go at them as well. But anyway, check out YouTube, like and subscribe. Join the 1,500-odd people on there already following every move. And as we're in a transfer window, you'll see more and more from DR Kernaz around the transfer rumours. If you want to keep up to date on the realistic and the ridiculous, and we'll cover all of them. So here we go. We're getting straight into the topic of the Sheffield United game. It was a 2-0 victory for Palace, as you heard in the intro. Both goals coming in the first half. A very early strike from Jeffrey Schlupp, as Palace started strongly and really needed to after recent performances. First half in Leicester was terrible. Obviously, the two games prior to that against Villa and Liverpool were shambolic. So Palace really needed that effort from the start, and they gave it against, let's face it, what was a terrible... terrible side in Sheffield United. They look relegated already. There's just no fight in them whatsoever. Really, really felt for the Sheffield United fans. I don't often feel for the away fans, but I certainly did there. But we want to start with talking about the man of the moment, and that's Eberechi Eze. Absolutely superb. Loads of people got in touch asking for us to talk about him today with Jackster CPFC on Twitter. Just asking the question, is Eze the best thing since sliced bread? It's difficult to compare a footballer to sliced bread, I have to say. But, I mean, let's just talk about the man, the potential, the player right now. And Alex, you haven't had an opportunity to talk on Back of the Nest about him. What are your thoughts just on the player that we've signed?
Oh, he's such an elegant player. Like, that's one thing that really stands out to me. I think when you see him run with the ball, he's so balanced. He's almost like a figure skater at times, the way he just turns with ease. He's just... really good to watch. And it's nice that we've actually gone out and just looked at talent in the Championship and just, you know, cherry-picked someone who's, you know, the right profile. You know, obviously South London born and bred. And, you know, he fits perfectly, you know, in our side for the future. Probably, you know, obviously Hodgson's always tricky to know where, how he would fit in. Obviously didn't start the game yesterday, but he's got so much potential and, you know, at least someone we could build the team around for years to come. And that's if, you know, no one else comes knocking on our door to try and pick him up. Because, you know, I'd find it tricky to see how we can keep hold of him if he continues this. Because he's started really well, and that's with, like, limited opportunities so far. So, you know, it's exciting. Yeah. And the great thing is, there's hope. You know, I know it didn't happen with Wilf going off and playing for Ivory Coast, but, you know, Eze could actually play for England, couldn't he? He's still eligible. He's played for the under-21s. And it'd be nice to have someone like that, if Wilf does go in the future, someone like that we build a team around. It'd be so exciting to have someone from the area as well, you know, South London boy, and someone that we can look up to. So, yeah, really exciting times.
Definitely. And, you know, we'll certainly talk a little bit more about potential international chances in a moment. But, you know, for me, it's very interesting to see the football world sort of standing up and taking note. And I went back and read the article in the Athletic from when we signed him. It was literally released on the day that the bid got accepted. And it talked about the kind of journey which we're all familiar with. But it also went into the detail of Palace's work scouting him. And we spent an awful long time looking at him and made contact with QPR, you know, a year before we signed him, and basically started to discuss our plans at that point and what we felt. And obviously at that point, we didn't agree a fee. And I think it was Les Ferdinand who came out and said that Palace were the closest ones to agreeing anything, but never actually made a bid. So maybe by waiting that little bit of extra time, we ended up paying more money. And negotiations were certainly extended. Lots of other people came in, but the reason he joined Palace is because he saw it as the right club. And that's, you know, when we talk about potentially him leaving and all that sort of stuff and other people coming in for him, I just, you know, I cling to the fact that he will have a plan in his head. He would have, you know, had those difficulties before. And he will see that developing, growing, improving as a player at Palace is probably the best thing for him in the short term, at the very least. But we've got to talk about the goal, Mike. Sai got in touch, Sabre74 on Twitter, and said, Eze scored goal of the season, no debate. And I know you mentioned a friend of yours questioned that.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, in fairness, he's a Millwall supporter, so there may have been something to do with that. Before we get into that, I just want to mention the sliced bread thing. He is the best thing since sliced bread, but I mean, currently Chris is on keto, so he isn't having it. And I've decided that I'm not going to cut beer out in January. I'm just going to cut down on sliced bread. So I'm going to say he's better than sliced bread. The goal, I suggested to him on a Zoom chat that we were having just when Match of the Day was about to kick off. I was like, put it on. It's got a similar goal to either the one that John Barnes scored against Brazil or the one Maradona scored against us. And it came on, and some of the others on the chat had already seen it. So they're like, oh, it's amazing, amazing. I don't see it. It's nothing like it. He just walks through them. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, it's Sheffield United. He can only beat who he's in front of. But the elegance, the fact that he used the player to block the view of the keeper, absolutely everything. I was like, it's 70 yards. What's wrong with you? In the end, I chose the Eze goal above my friend, and he's no longer my friend.
Well, look, probably the only thing I could say to that, right, is that because he made it look so easy, it's easy to underappreciate it because it does look effortless, right? But that's the genius of it. That's why it is that special, right? To walk past players the way he did, you can't even spot the acceleration. But if you watch him in relation to the players he's going past, you know, he absolutely speeds past them, but it doesn't look like it. You know, everyone used the word glide, and that's exactly what it is. It's gliding past people. But the quick feet to get past Ampadu, everyone's saying, oh, what a terrible challenge from Ampadu. But it was just change of direction and the sudden touch. You know, it didn't break stride. The legs moved at the same speed, if you like. But somehow he was quicker, and that touch came out of nowhere. It was absolutely superb. And like you say, to have the natural presence of mind to make that calculation, to see the defender in the position he's in, that comes from real class. That is the kind of thing you see in footballers who are just instinctive and very, very special, and rightly so. Most people lauding it, apart from Millwall fans. But, of course, Millwall let him go as a kid, so they must be feeling a bit sick.
Yeah, I did remind him of that. He was unaware. I didn't realise quite how difficult he'd had it as a kid, you know, to the point where he was gonna work in a shop instead. I mean, incredible turnaround.
The list of teams that let him go is unbelievable, really. You know, he was at Arsenal, he was at Reading, he was at Bristol City, Millwall, obviously. I think there's a couple of others in that list who must be really, really sick. Alex, what did you think? I mean, your views on the goal, I've got to let you talk about it.
Well, it was brilliant. Yeah, it's sort of like, it's sort of more technical, I think, than, you remember Son's goal from last season? I think that won that goal of the season against Burnley, where he ran past, you know, from one side of the pitch to the other. But this one was a bit more technical, all the, you know, the really nice touches, and you know, Eze just comes across as sort of like a, you know, those 360 players, the players that sort of like can turn just so easily, and you saw that in just the way he made it so effortless, just, you know, running past that Sheffield United midfield. And yeah, I think it was a great finish towards the end of it as well. It's just showing that he's definitely got that end product and that potential to score a lot of goals for us in the future. So yeah, really exciting.
For sure. And you mentioned, of course, that, you know, he wasn't selected to start in this game. So I've got an interesting question around this. So obviously I want him to start every game. I love watching Eze play. I get frustrated when he isn't picked from the start. And, you know, I love Jeff Schlupp for what he brings. I've very much changed in that respect since he stopped playing in central midfield. I no longer hate the fact that he's being picked. But, and I was very, very sad to see him injured. But is there an argument to say that by doing this with Eze as a young player, it's quite a common tactic, isn't it, for young players, for managers to put them in and out of the side? Do you think he scores that goal if he starts? Because he had two relatively quiet games prior to it. And he was obviously, you could see, they showed a couple of shots of him on the bench during the course of the game. And he didn't look particularly happy. Obviously, it was cold and, you know, he's having to sit in the stands and watch the action. But, you know, do you think maybe he came on with a point to prove there?
Yeah, maybe. But I don't think actually that was Hodgson's intention, you know. I just think that Hodgson just won't change, will he? He won't, you know, he's just stuck in his ways in terms of, you know, the way he wants to play football. I think that Eze's just such a tremendous talent that talent will always just shine through eventually. And, you know, you could see that. He obviously really wanted to come on, came off the bench and just, you know, was just perfect when he came on. And I'm surprised he's managed to take a... You know, with Hodgson, I was surprised that, not surprised he didn't get many opportunities so far, because obviously he's been in and out of start off the side. He didn't start at the beginning of the season, and then he had a spell of games, and obviously he played, and then obviously Hodgson dropped him, brought him back in yesterday. But the fact that he's had so little opportunities to make his mark, that he's, you know, he's done really well, to be honest. He's scored a few, he's provided a few goals. He's scored a couple. He's combined really well with Wilf. You couldn't ask for a better start, really, for a new signing. And you see a lot of new signings in the, you know, in the division that have just, especially players from the Championship that come with big potential, that, you know, sometimes take quite a while to settle in. But he's obviously, you know, like a duck to water, isn't he? He's settled in really quickly, and that's, you know, it's sort of like the one shining point of a sort of a tricky start for us, to be honest, because, you know, it's not been rosy, has it, so far? But, you know, hope, you know, it gets better from now onwards. So
indeed, but weirdly, our points total is good for us, so it just feels a whole lot worse. Yeah. I don't think the Liverpool and Villa games helped, but I mean, on this topic, Mike, Michael Hart got in touch and said, you know, obviously don't like to see people going off injured, but as they should have started. If Roy loves Schlupp so much, then can't you have Eze replace Townsend in the starting 11? And I was thinking about this. It's very difficult. I mean, Roy was quite right after the game to talk about the fact that he has, you know, those three, if you like, competing for two places, Eze, Schlupp and Andros Townsend. But after the Leicester performance, I thought Townsend deserved to start. But then, you know, obviously Schlupp got the goal as well. So, you know, where do you stand on that?
So there's an interview with Chris Grierson on TPFC website. We can come on to that later. I think Roy wasn't grilled particularly heavily on certain issues in that interview. But he did say, you know, he's got three excellent wide midfield players, is how he described them. And he said he chose Townsend, A, on the back of the Leicester performance, which I think is absolutely justified, And B, Alex is absolutely right on the fact that he thought Eze could come on and do something later on in the game. So you might be right that he's playing some kind of mind games with him, but Alex is absolutely right. He even said as much. He wasn't expecting him to come on that early, and he wasn't expecting him to make an impact that early. He sort of laughed while he was saying it. So whether Eze could have done much with 15 minutes to go if it had been one apiece, I'm not so sure. You could certainly tell from the post-match interview that Eze had on Sky. Annoyingly, I haven't re-seen it. It's just hard to re-see those things. But there was an underlying element that he wasn't too impressed about being on the bench, which surprised me, because everything I've heard from him come out of his mouth so far is a very humble, easygoing, intelligent guy. He clearly wants to be playing the whole time. And you can understand, as a man that cost that much money, he probably was given promises that he would be playing a lot of games. So to see yourself not starting two games is going to hurt. And I think he had a point to prove. I'm not saying he necessarily did it just with the goal. It was across the whole of the game, because he defends in a way that people don't give him credit for as well. You know, to say that Schlupp is the obvious choice as a defensive option as well as an attacking one is a gibberish, because we're playing a team with 2 points on the board that, you know, couldn't hit a barn door. And B, Eze absolutely, you know, Hodgson said plenty of times that he surprised him with how good he is going back. So there's no obvious reason for Eze to understand why he's not being picked. So I can understand his frustration.
Yeah, definitely. If I was in his position, not that I would be, especially not at my age, but if I was in his position, I'd be asking things like, even when he is picked, why am I not taking, you know, direct free kicks? Why does he have to concede that to Luka every time, given his, you know, his success rate so far? You know, the fact that he takes a much better corner than anyone else on the team, why is it that he's not taking every corner? Those are the sort of things that do strike me as a little bit odd. Directly after the Leeds game, you know, first game after, he didn't take a single free kick or corner, I don't think.
And, nope.
You know, and you're just like, what? Yeah, he's just on. We scored from the corner that he took, and he scored with a direct free kick, and then you just don't let him do it again. So, yeah, bizarre stuff, really. But, you know, at the same time, it's good to have a player with hunger. Sometimes giving players a little bit of frustration, some that little extra edge does help. So, you know, whether or not we give Roy the credit for that, I'm not so sure. But I'm going to say, whether it was accident or by design, you know, it worked in our favour in this game for sure. And you know, you've quite rightly talked about the fact that defensively, I thought particularly in this game, he did a really good job. There was a couple of times where it was him right at the back making absolutely key clearances. Not that Sheffield United were getting through our defence very well, but he was still really important that he was back there doing that work. So, you know, we briefly mentioned how long before we might have an issue keeping him. And I don't want to dwell on that. It's something we'll undoubtedly have to come back to at some point if he continues this progression. But again, Alex, you mentioned international chances. Obviously could play for Nigeria, currently playing for the under-21s for England. Doesn't always start and quite often is subbed off as well for players that I don't think are anywhere near his talent. And it'd be a horrible thing if England were to miss out again. Not that, you know, part of me does think that whole environment isn't the best thing for a player, you know, at a club like Palace either, because all of a sudden you get a player called up to the England squad and people get in their ear and you lose them straight off. But I don't like it as an environment, and part of me thinks, you know, he probably should choose Nigeria. But I am English. I want the national team to do well, and more than that, I want Palace players playing for England as well. So realistically, do you feel he has a chance, even, you know, in by the end of the season, potentially to be called up? And if so, you know, the other side of the coin is, if he was playing for a bigger club, do you think he'd have been called up already?
Maybe, yeah. We've seen it with Southgate, you know, giving chances to players that have been in the under 21 squad over sort of older players that are in the Premier League. But, you know, on the other hand, we saw what, you know, Southgate's treatment with Wilf in the under 21s, and how he never got a chance, and how frustrated he got, and he went to play for the Ivory Coast. So, I'm just looking at the odds actually to see you know, what his odds are to make the England squad for the Euros. All right, so I know it's a long shot, but 20-1, and you look at the players that are above him that are shorter, you know, the likes of Delph and Loftus-Cheek and Dele Alli, and, you know, Ross Barkley is injured at the moment. You know, you could argue he's ahead of them at the moment, isn't he? So, you know, if there's a few injuries, then you might see him get called up, you know, in terms of for a friendly, giving him a chance. I'm not sure if there's any competitive games, but, you know, probably it's a bit too soon for him this year, but in terms of the next campaign, he should definitely get a look in, should definitely be, you know, in the minds of that England backroom staff, because, you know, you don't want to lose talent like Eze, and you know, Eze is young, isn't he? He's still early, 22 as well. It's got a big future, and you've seen it with, you know, likes of Grealish. Like, Grealish is, you know, similar to sort of player, very like technically gifted. And you look at him, he's come leaps and bounds this year. He's obviously looks like he's going to be starting for England, the Euros. So, you know, why not? Eze should be given a chance.
Just to add to that, I don't think it's quite the same as Zaha in that I don't see that he has, I might be wrong, but from what I've heard, no, in terms of family ties, I think Zaha was under more family pressure to play for Ivory Coast than it seems Eze would be to play for Nigeria. The other thing is that the AFCON is being moved from every 2 years to every 4 years, I think, or certainly that was Infantino's hope. So that would limit the amount of Nigerian playing time. Because a lot of the time, you know, African teams can seem like a better option, knowing that you're going to get a lot more international duty. So, yeah, it'd be interesting that.
For sure. So we have a new sponsor for the month. It's Manscaped. So Manscaped have just launched in the UK. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job, and you can be one of the first men in England to experience their life-changing products. Now, two of the people on this particular call have had a lovely, lovely goodie bag or box, if you like, from Manscaped. If you're a podcast fan like I am, you might have heard them on various different international podcasts, particularly stuff from the US. But as I just said, they have launched in England, and we're really, really excited to partner up with them. And so, I mean, look, manscaped.com is where you need to head, and you'll see from their product range exactly what they are. But the name should really give you an indication on what it is. And, you know, we're going to talk, talk frankly about it. And so, first of all, I guess, Mike, I'm going to start with you. I guess that not everybody really thinks about this, but I know you're a man who takes his manscaping very seriously indeed. And what's your past experiences been of trimming your testicles? I mean, not the testicles themselves, the garden around them.
Well, as a man in his mid-30s, hurtling towards 40, when I first started the old manscaping back at school, it was at a time when it was a lot less socially acceptable. And I got so much shit for so many years. It's great now to see that there's a company that's actually, you know, there's been adverts now, yeah, the Liverpool adverts and Liverpool players, you know, shaving their chests and all that kind of stuff. It's great that there's now actually a company that's offering people the opportunity to do it and actually decent tools rather than just nicking your girlfriend's leg razor. So you sort of learn, don't you? But back in the day when you were using a disposable two-blade razor that you got from Poundland, that's not very effective. Once you do it once, once you turn the old balls once, it's pretty damn easy. There's a certain member of the podcast team that admitted he'd never trimmed ever. And it sounded like his other half was very happy that he was going to do so. So, you certainly, if don't do it for yourself, then you do it for your other half. Yeah, it's absolutely worthwhile. I opened the packet and I made a little video ready to stick on YouTube, but realised that a lot of what you'd be doing isn't something you can really add to a YouTube video. So.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, on our recent watch along, me and DR talked about it, and DR told everyone he was going to show them the package. And I had to clarify that the package he was referring to was indeed the box that we got sent of the goodies rather than his actual man package. But look, many of you will know this already because it's quite an interesting and hilarious thing. But if you go on to reviews of, shall we say, hair removal creams and look at the stories that people have had trying to manscape using that kind of stuff, I think the song Great Balls of Fire is probably quite an appropriate song to think about.
It's mentioning the between us, isn't it?
So, like. Absolutely right. But I've got to say, look, they sent us a wonderful little kit. It had the lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. It had ball toner.
One each. We weren't sharing one.
No. You know, we didn't all get together in a socially distanced way and shave each other's balls with a selfie stick or anything like that. But what we did get is a wonderful selection of stuff. So the trimmer, the ball toner, ball deodorant, and DR, if we all share his unboxing video at some point. I've never heard anyone so excited about the concept of ball deodorant, absolutely fantastic stuff. But look, you know, I'll straight up, I've tried it out, and let me tell you, like, it is fantastic. It's so easy. And most importantly, you do feel really clean and fresh. It's a hygiene thing. And there's people out there who would never have even thought of trimming. And you don't realise how much of a difference it makes. It really is impressive. Alex, just very quickly, you weren't fortunate enough due to your exile to get a kit. But you got any manscaping stories for us?
Nothing of note. But, yeah, it's nice to not be able to you know, borrow my girlfriend's Venus like blade or my dad's big razor or something, and being in absolute agony afterwards. So I think it's good. It's 2021 after all, isn't it? So things like this are you know, fine these days. So
well, I'm sure there's plenty of people listening who've had some terrible experiences trying to do some below the belt trimming, and that is why Manscaped have redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team has perfected the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. We have them. They exist. They are fantastic. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. And when I tell you this is premium, I do mean premium. The battery lasts for up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer shave. The waterproof technology allows you to groom in the shower. And it's got an LED light. It illuminates the grooming areas for a closer and more precise trimming. Plus, you know, the light allows you to show off that area as well if you're feeling very frisky. they've also upgraded to a 7,000 RPM motor. And Albert's favourite, they've got quiet stroke technology. He always wants to talk about quiet stroke for some reason. I'm not sure. And let's not forget about the charging stands. You can show your mower off loud and proud because the intelligently designed stand is a convenient charging dock powered by USB. We at Back of the Nest want you to experience it firsthand for yourselves so you can feel as clean, confident and fresh as we all do. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code BOTN at manscaped.com. Make your testies their besties.
I just need to add to that as well. It can be used all over. Like, it's better than my clippers. So you know, if you give yourself a fade in lockdown, it's going to help you as well. So just bear that in mind. It's useful. And anyone that's got any stories about horror stories about like splitting themselves open and stuff, send it on, and we'll add it into the next pod.
Absolutely right, and I don't mind telling you. They've got all sorts of other products in their range. Check out manscaped.com. I'll be using the 20% discount to get some additional bits myself, I have to say. Huge range of stuff there. And I'm very in the package that we got, we also got some really fresh boxers. I'm very happy with those as well. Incredibly comfortable. But anyway, there you go. Manscaped.com, code BOTN for 20% off.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Fantime videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is Plush Care. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, topic two for us, and I've called it Roy Rescued, but it's really an opportunity for us to talk about the game itself, the performance in general. You know, how do we feel it went? You know, I thought certainly first half was a very strong showing against a team that were clearly struggling, but we didn't give them anything. We didn't really let them into the game at all. And, you know, usually I'll get a little frustrated if we're a little over negative or anything like that, but I think it was exactly what was called for. You know, we were playing a team that, you know, if we weren't careful, we'd do what we often do, which is give a team that's struggling that little ray of light, give them a bit of confidence, give them a bit of time on the ball. But we were right at it from the very start. And I think that made a real impact. And Mike, I know you chucked in the positional report in there. And looking at Palace's structure there, you know, it's very noticeable first and foremost that the front four were operating in a very strict line, if you like. So, you know, plenty of people getting forward. You know, Schlupp was started on the left, Benteke dropping deep, and Wilf was really the kind of figurehead up the top. And it was from that first goal came from Benteke dropping right to the halfway line, a fantastic cushioned header into Townsend. Townsend's fantastic ball over the fullback for Zaha rushing on. And then after that, you know, we got a little bit fortunate with Benteke's first time pass deflected into the path of Schlupp. But he reacted brilliantly. Again, a little deflection on the shot, but not enough to keep it out. And that was reflected in how we played throughout the entire first half and then obviously controlled the second half afterwards. But anything you wanted to pick out, Mike, in terms of how we set up, how we played?
Yeah, I think the reason I added this in is because we essentially played a 4-2-4. And if you look at them, they played a congealed mess. They didn't, you know, they've got there's nothing there. But yeah, a strict 4-2-4 with the so MacArthur and Luca playing very much in the middle of the middle. And like you say, a front four that very much stayed in a line together. And you mentioned Benteke there. I think one of the reasons, I know Tompkins played down in the post-match saying that they, you know, the second half was just, you know, they already knew that they'd won. So they just kept it simple. And fair enough, I think that's probably true. But Benteke going off with a dead leg, he played plenty of flick-ons. It's no surprise that he had the most headers for Palace in the game, despite only playing half the game. So, yeah, there was a definite game plan for him to flick on and for them to stay fairly close together. Interestingly, quite compact. Again, not too much down the flanks. Mainly, I think, because the team worked out fairly quickly that you could get through Sheffield United's defence without the need of going down the flanks and crossing it in. Eze particularly, but Schlupp as well, quite easily play the ball through them and even run through them. So, I don't think that these are tactics that are going to work against a lot of teams. And I'm sure Hodgson made sure that he tailored it towards a very poor Sheffield United side. But yeah, it's very interesting that it's a 4-2-4 and very interesting that the front four played in a way that I don't think I've seen before, or certainly did until the injuries.
No, definitely. And, you know, I mean, you know, the beauty of Eze replacing Schlupp is we didn't suffer at all for that injury. Obviously disappointing. Obviously, Benteke went off injured with a dead leg as well. He'll obviously be back, I should think, before we see Jeffrey Schlupp again. But so I do want to pick out prior to the match kicking off, certainly, Alex, on social media, there was a lot of negative reaction to the team that was picked. Mainly centered around the fact we'll talk about the Luca situation in a bit, but we'll keep to the on-field, the on-pitch thing. People still not a massive fan of Luca this season anyway, but also reacted quite negatively to Jimmy Mack starting ahead of Jairo Riedewald. So I suppose, I mean, I've asked the question, what has Jairo done wrong not to be picked? But I will admit, you know, that I thought Macca needed a rest and I thought he was superb for Palace as well. But, you know, what was your initial reaction? And do you think perhaps Roy's decision was vindicated in the end?
Bit disappointed, but obviously Roy has his favourites, doesn't he? You know, and you know, and obviously there's no blight on MacArthur, because MacArthur's been a great servant for us. He's, you know, he's been excellent in the last six, seven seasons. But obviously he's, you know, towards the end, I would say. But he's still solid, you know, he's still a solid operator. I still think he's still got a bit of life in him. It's just a shame because I think Jairo, whenever he's been in the side, he just looks a bit more like combative. He looks like he's a bit more dynamic in there, because there's just not a lot of pace if you have MacArthur and Luca in that midfield. And against someone like a Sheffield United, you know, I wasn't really excited at that really, because it's just a lot of reliance on Wilf and a lot of reliance on Townsend as well. So yeah, but you know, obviously they were a team in an absolute state. They've had a few injuries. They've changed the side quite a lot in the last, you know, five or six games because of the position they're in the league. So we were quite lucky really. It was almost like a free hit for us. Because you know they're in a team in disarray. You know, they're close to breaking the Premier League record, aren't they? In terms of like games without a win. And so you know, you could have put anyone out there. It sounds strange saying that, but I just think that Sheffield United offered nothing going forward. They were a state, and I think it was more them playing poorly than us playing well. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
I don't think we were outstanding, but I think we had some good individual performances. You know, obviously we mentioned about Eze earlier, but I feel that Sheffield United are in such a terrible situation at the moment. It was a perfect time to play them, especially after the amount of games that they've just played, how many games we've played. I think we've got the better squad out of the two teams, and it just shows. You know, players like Riedewald, I think, would be perfect for someone like Sheffield United, but you know, he's on the bench for us, and we've got players like Eze on the bench. Well, they've got, I think they had one less sub. I think they didn't have the maximum allocation of subs.
Three less. They could have picked.
They're three less. So they really, really are struggling, aren't they, at the moment? So yeah, to be honest, I think we could put anyone in the middle there, and we would have been okay.
Yeah. Well, no, Mike, you want to take this on a little bit? Just, you know, obviously, Sheffield United is a good point to make, and they have had the worst ever start of any team. I think it's any team in the top division, let alone just the Premier League, but certainly the worst ever start of anybody. And you're right, all sorts of records come in their way if they don't change that soon. But Mike, I know you wanted to sort of take the question around Gyro, and you know, would it have been better or worse if he'd been selected? And you've got something to say on that, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're right about it is the worst ever start, by the way. They've got 2 points. That Derby team had 5 points. So this was before the game. Derby had five at the same point. Although Sheffield United are still way off their record. They went 35 games without a win. Sheffield United have gone 19. So, yeah, I mean, they've still got a way to beat that particular amazing record. But yeah, Jimmy Mack, I mean, I was frustrated with the Eze thing, rather. At the moment, I think that we've got decent players. We've got two players for a lot of positions, so I'm not that bothered. The reason I like Joe to start is because, you know, a long-term prospect for Palace, and I've just got a soft spot for him, and he's, you know, the haircut well covered. But Jimmy Mack, so out of 31 attempted tackles during the game from Palace in total, 9 of them were from Jimmy Mack. And it just underlines, it doesn't matter how old he gets, he doesn't ever need a break. He is the proper Energizer Bunny. He is the Scottish Energizer Bunny. So yeah, I don't think it would have been necessarily any better to have Gyro on there. We had enough sort of players playing decent passes around Sheffield United without needing Gyro, really, and that's what he's great at doing. His passing is absolutely 100 times better than Lucas and 50 times better than Jimmy Max. But you're right, Alex, it wasn't really needed. So I'm not sure. I think there might be a method to Roy's madness in that he knew it wasn't really necessary this game. Having said that, let's see if he comes back in or not.
Yeah, and I still maintain he didn't do a single thing to warrant being dropped, and there's nothing in his performances whatsoever to suggest that we aren't, in all honesty, we aren't a better side with him in there. So I still don't understand it. But having said that, I thought, you know, despite the off-field stuff, I thought Luca had a very good game. I thought he was very good against Leicester as well, particularly in the second half. And Maka, you know, absolutely, as you say, Energizer Bunny. There was nothing there that suggested that he was tired. So maybe getting subbed the other day was enough of a rest for him. I don't know. But, you know, I'm just a big fan of Gyro, as I'm sure everybody is. And I think he had something different. And that's the one thing I do have a problem with this Palace side, that we have too many people doing the same thing, and we don't mix it up, and we don't you know, provide much of a surprise for anyone who's preparing to play us. Having said that, you're quite right, both of you, saying that Sheffield United never had the capability to do anything about that anyway. So the next topic is around, you know, another thing that was, a few people asked this question, and I got copied in on a few tweets as well during the course of the game, particularly when Ayew came on, when Benteke was injured ahead of Batshuayi again. And it just seems very odd. You know, he is a quality striker. Not only that, you know, he wants to obviously play in the European Championships. But he's currently behind Jordan Ayew in the pecking order at Palace, the team he joined on loan, to get more game time. So it seems extremely odd that he's that far down the pecking order. I've raised the question, could it be financial? Is there a sum we have to pay every time he plays, that the reason that we're not using him off the bench, perhaps? That's the only thing I can really think to justify it, because Jordan Ayew is in wretched form. But, you know, Roy has in the past backed the players that are under contract at Palace over loan players. You know, everyone remembers Camarasa As an example there as well.
Do you though?
Sorry, some people might remember Camarasa.
4,000 odd people that saw him.
Yeah. But there you go. So other views on that. Mike, I'll start with you, and then Alex, I'll let you come in as well, on that as well.
Yeah, it's an odd one. I mean, first of all, I suppose you've got to remember that there was no real sign that Benteke was going to resurrect any kind of form when Batshuayi was taken on loan. So he could have been below IU in the pecking order the whole time, but still got a lot more game time because he would have been above Benteke in the pecking order. So that's a renaissance that's not done him any favours. But yeah, you've got to think that he might go back. Having said that, you know, he's just got a dead leg, and it only takes one of them to get injured for Batshuayi to be back in it. The one thing I will add, though, is Palace weren't caught offside once during the game. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's Bruce Dyer levels of loving an offside is Batshuayi. Alex, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a shame, really, that we've taken him on loan, especially with, you know, that the rules now with loans and the fact that you're only allowed, you know, one loan slot from each club. So if we weren't going to give Batshuayi a chance, then why didn't we take someone else on loan from Chelsea? You know, they've got loads of players that were, you know, good assets that we could have taken on loan. It sounds weird. It sounds weird me saying it. There's a lot of players, but we were linked with Gallagher, weren't we? And
yeah,
and we were linked. Well, you know, who's to say? You know, someone else might have been available. So yeah, it's a shame really, because it's like we've playing two up top now as well. So you know, there is definitely a slot for one other player to play out there with Wilf. I'm not massive. I don't think that Benteke's been outstanding. I don't think he's been amazing. I just think he's been solid. I just don't think he's been, you know, I still think there's an opportunity there for someone to come in, whether that is AE, whether that's Batshuayi, maybe having one more chance. But yeah, it's difficult, really. It does feel like we said, this season's always a transitional season. I think this is the last, you know, if Hodgson does leave in the summer, I didn't see us spending big money on a striker in the summer. Or big money on any player, to be honest, apart from Eze in the summer. So I think it's more of a stopgap until the summer, until when we actually start investing on a big striker. Because yeah.
I'll admire your optimism there. Yeah. No, look, I mean, obviously it feels like a waste. And given that we did have a deal in place for Gallagher, and we chose to and it made sense at the time. Yeah. It really did to get a striker in. My gut feel is right now we would be a bit better off having Gallagher as an option in the centre of midfield than a benched Batshuayi. But like you're saying, he takes one or two absences and all of a sudden you might need him. You know, there's a difficulty in him going back as well. Chelsea won't want to be paying him to sit on the bench at their club. They'd much rather we pay him to sit on our bench. And, you know, you're looking at someone else being able to take on those wages if they do take him back. They gave him an extra year on his contract, so this loan would just be an opportunity for us to maybe try before we buy again. But, you know, it's not gone well. And I have, you know, not being smug or anything, I didn't think it would, if I'm being brutally honest, but it's not gone well for different reasons than I expected. I expected us not to create much and him to struggle. But there we go. It's been much more around the fact that other players have stepped up and we're playing in a certain way that doesn't appear to suit him. Mike, you brought up Klein. Obviously, Klein was said to have had a back injury, and you know, his contract runs out at the end of January, of course. I have not heard anything myself. There's been speculation that you've put in here, I think, that says he might not be staying, which obviously would be absolutely terrible in my view. But yeah, I mean, what are your concerns there?
Well, this is purely from people tweeting on the back of no inside knowledge. But it only takes that for me to be petrified. So, yes, he supposedly got a knock and that's why Ward's in. But his very short-term contract he was given is due to end very shortly. And I hope that the actual reason he's not in the squad, not in the side, isn't to do with that, because I've just come to grips with the fact that the man is back and he's been growing in confidence and looking excellent, and I really hope that he gets a contract. So I hope the people that wrote those tweets were just doing it to try and give people a heart attack, because that would suck big time.
I think people immediately, you know, If they don't hear straight away that it's an injury, yeah. People do fear the worst, don't they? And put two and two together and sometimes get five. But obviously nothing's been announced that his contract's been extended, and I've not heard
anything. And it would
myself.
Make no sense because he has been excellent and he's being picked. So, considering how short we are, I mean, I know Alex has said, is Ferguson alive? I think last time I heard he was due back in January, whether that's going to happen or not. It's going to be a slow... Hodgson's not going to dump him straight in the team. It's not the way he works.
I think more than that, the sad thing with Ferguson is that, he's over the injury that he had to have an operation for, was coming back to fitness and then got a thigh strain, which put him out for another 3 weeks. So every time he seems to come back to training... He's got that thing that all people have when they have a serious injury where, the muscles are trying to get used to it. And it's not a good time of year either to start coming back and putting strain on muscles that haven't been used because you get pulls. That's why we saw, a couple of injuries in the game. But yeah, look, Ferguson is talked about in very, being a player capable of reaching a very, very high standard. Lots of people have been very negative about it because he hasn't played yet, and understandably so, but... As you're getting to there, Mike, really, it's not likely that he's going to play anytime soon. So it'd be nonsensical to let Klein go while that's still the case, unless we've got somebody else lined up.
Or unless he's got something better lined up. I'd be surprised.
Possible. Well, you never know. You know, if people know he's on a short-term contract, his performances wouldn't have gone unnoticed, would they? So maybe there is something else out there for him. But you kind of hope that he's happy back at Palace, given the few years he's had. So I think this is you as well, Mike, with the crosses in the game. I don't know, you'll talk about this one.
Yeah, so there was only 11 crosses from Palace in the game, and that's from who scored. And their idea of a cross is they count most things as a cross. I sort of wondered whether the tactics that were initially put out for the game, which were working so well, got a bit lost when Benteke limped off with a dead leg. Because he's become such a pinnacle point of the current system that's meant that we've scored, as many goals so far this season as we managed last season. Or was it just that Sheffield United worked so shit that there was no need for crossing? It's hard to tell. I imagine that there'll be more crosses against better sides.
Well, we still don't really cross a tremendous amount. It gets talked about, especially by, commentators and summarisers. They keep talking about the fact that with Benteke playing, Palace will be hammering crosses into the box and we just don't do it. It's a really odd situation. But you're right. I mean, 11 actually feels like quite a lot of crosses. I don't remember them.
Yeah, I reckon 9 of them were probably, those sort of Townsend balls that are sort of diagonal, kind of count as a cross.
I know Mitchell got forward a couple of times and hit low crosses into the box, and we do that more often than we do sort of float across in as well. So and that's something I think does negatively impact on Benteke anyway. But I don't know if you got a feeling, Alex, whether or not Benteke going off really really hampered us. It seemed to hamper us in the way that we played when he was when he was suspended as well.
Do you know? Yeah, I suppose so. But I actually thought AU played quite well when he came on, to be honest. He actually looked better than he has done. I know that's not saying a lot really, because he's been a bit awful the last month or two. But when he came on, he has actually looked quite lively, to be honest. He's actually getting into pockets. But again, we are playing against a really terrible, terrible side. And a team that play with that, they're three at the back. They are really deep, so there's quite a lot of space of players like AU to come on and find space. So I do find it weird though still that we don't cross the ball in as with someone like Benteke, who's always known as like one of the best players to head of the ball in the division, which is strange. But yeah, well, it's funny because when we did used to cross the ball in the box, we'd have players like Meyer in the team and stuff like that, which just made me laugh. So
yeah. It's just this weird little thing that we do. We only cross when there's no one there to head it in. But there you go. It's just one of those little things.
Dwight Gale as well. I remember when Dwight Gale was up top back in the day, obviously, we'd always just cross the ball in then. And now we've got, someone like Benteke up top. We still don't do it, but yeah, I guess to be honest, most of the players on our side don't really cross the ball in that often, do they? We don't have, you know, PVA and Mitchell not really crosses the ball. The only person who could really put a cross in the box is someone like a Townsend, isn't it? But he's
yeah,
buried it.
Exactly, yeah. But I mean, that's, you know, that's the modern game seems to be much more about players from the, playing on the opposite wings these days, cutting in and either getting a shot away or putting a slightly different type of cross in, which, you know, there you go. Anyway, that's quite enough on crossing. Mitchell, we can talk about a little bit. We talk about him a lot anyway. I'm just going to say this, Mike, and that is that I really, at the moment, really value having a left-back who's playing left-back.
Oh, yeah.
But you got some stats there.
Yeah, I think you're in the massive majority now. So he had the most touches by any Palace player in the games, 92 out of 639. Most of their threat, so half of all of their chances came down the right flank. A little bit came down the middle, and then I think it was about 30% down the other side. But it was because Bogle was their main threat, I think, if you can count it as that. So, you know, he dealt with that really well. He talked after the game about how Kouyaté has been coaching him through it. I mean, I think most of us surely agree that he's now the first choice left back. It's probably not really up for that much debate anymore.
Well, got to be. Look, in the interests of time, I'm sure we'll get to come back to Tyreek Mitchell another time anyway. You mentioned in there the Zaha Bogle incident where Wilf got a little bit frustrated, pushed him away. All I'm going to say on that is, yes, in terms of what you put in the show doc, Mike, it is a storm in a teacup. And I get really frustrated about double standards. When people, for example, praise someone like James McCarthy for getting in people's faces, putting in tough challenges, you know, getting involved with a ref, winding people up. But when Zaha does it, it's petulance and he's a spoilt child. You know, that to me is showing a bias that I don't feel comfortable with. So I think people will always, to some degree, remember Wilf as quite a difficult and aggressive youngster who used to respond badly to being wound up. But, you know, he plays with aggression, he plays with passion. And those are the things we should be saying about it. If he gets himself sent off, if he creates a problem, he will rightly deserve criticism. But when he's just fighting his corner, when he's getting frustrated about being kicked, when he's being wound up by other people, and in that incident, Bogle said something to him, all right? He wasn't angry when he got up after the foul. He's looking at the ref, and you could see it on the replay. Bogle says something to him, don't know what he says, and Wilf reacts in a way that's like, why would you say that? It's ridiculous. So it was obviously something unpleasant and unnecessary, and you know, human beings are allowed to get upset in that situation. You know, we don't watch robots. So there you go. Look, Mark Drew said, has that result saved Roy? I'm going to answer that really quickly. It depends entirely on your perspective of whether or not Roy needs saving, but to me, beating Sheffield United, beating a really poor team, doesn't mean that we can't be frustrated about the things that have been frustrating us all season, you know. And I still think personally that this is Roy's final season, and personally, I'd like a change sooner rather than later. But I was really encouraged by the match. I was encouraged by the fact we got 3 points, and it does certainly take a little bit of the pressure off of him, for sure. So I want to talk about our sponsor, Pitch Sport. They've been our sponsor for quite some time now. You will be aware of them, but please do get involved. If you Google Pitch Sport Football or Pitch Sport DMM, you'll be able to download their app to your device. And I was doing the post-match ratings this week, and I predicted a score of a 1-0 win to Sheffield United. That's just reverse psychology. Don't worry about that. I wasn't expecting to, anyway. I voted for my man of the match, and that was James Tomkins. Oh, that was interesting, isn't it? I went to James Tomkins. Who did you go with, Alex, very quickly? Who's your man of the match?
Yesterday, I would probably say Eze. I think Eze was
there. You go. He did get given it by the commentators. Yeah. Mike, how about you?
I mean, Eze really, but yeah, I thought Jimmy Mack.
Well, there we go. Both good choices, I have to say, but I've loved having Tomkins back in. I'm sure we'll talk about that again in a sec. And if you want to add me on the Pitch Sport app, my code is KUGKUT. And just so you're aware, my ratings for team selection this week were 3 out of 5. Referee was 3 out of 5 because I didn't notice him too much. Manager, I gave 3.5 out of 5 because I'm a nice guy. An atmosphere, I gave 0.5 because that's the lowest it will allow me to go because there was no atmosphere. Although you can count Ray Lewington as atmosphere, and he gets that all on his own. So anyway, we'll leave that there, but do download Pitch Sport DMM, get involved on there. All those statistics get put into some wonderful material that gets shared with us, helps us build the show. The more people that are involved, the better those stats are, the better they reflect fan opinion. Support them because they support us. Okay, it's listener feedback time before we finish the show by talking about the key off the pitch situation this week. So very quickly, let's steam our way through. Alex, I'm going to ask you this one. Cameron has got in touch. That's Krenjil 994 on Twitter. Some of these Twitter names are hard to say. He says, is Schlupp our best finisher?
Maybe. Maybe up there with Wilf. He's definitely a better finisher than Benteke anyway. But I think Schlupp on his left foot, he's definitely the best left foot in the club, isn't he? And he's shown that he scores quite a lot of goals for us. So I think he's definitely up there with Wilf. And he's scored a lot of important goals for us.
Well, I think Ray Lewington's gone on record as saying that he's the best finisher at the club. And you're right, that left foot is pretty special. But he does score a few with his right as well. Yeah. He is two-footed. That's why he's played on
right. He used to be a striker, didn't he, back in the day when he was at Leicester?
Oh, yeah.
He used to be a striker and obviously played everywhere for us. But, yeah, he's definitely someone who's, you know, who if you give him a chance, he can score you know, important goals. So, yeah, I think he's been decent, bro.
Mike, this one's for you. Colin Squire Sr. is talking about, says, Tomkins, now he's fit and hopefully he can stay fit, has to be our best centre-back. Him and Kouyaté look good in the middle, although it was against a poor side. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say. I'm still clinging to the fact that for me in the last few years, the Tomkins-Sacco combination was the best and it was an absolute rock of a defence. Tomkins, he's clearly a real leader. His comments after the game, suggested that he's been missed by other players in the team. So he's got that to his game. I don't know how much Kouyaté does. He's a leader. He's going to hopefully be with the club a little bit longer than Cahill. He's already 35. So people say Tomkins perhaps, you know, is coming towards the end of his career. I really don't see it. He's got another 5 years in him. I really think we should be investing in Tomkins. And just to say that Sai said, Saber 74, credit to Tomkins who comes back in after 10 months out and immediately improves the defence. I think that probably sums it up better than I did.
Absolutely right. And just on a word on Kouyaté as well, it was interesting to hear Mitchell talk about the positive impact that Kouyaté has with him playing on that side now. Now Tomkins is back in. The fact that he talks to him throughout the game, talks about where he needs to be. And that's a role that Tomkins used to do very well with Wan-Bissaka when he broke through as well. And it is really important for all the praise that Mitchell rightly gets. Often it's, you know, with the players limited experience, so you have to learn, you know, the real fine art of positioning defensively. It's the job that they do is really important as well. So props to Kouyaté for that. And obviously, Kouyaté's probably enjoying the fact that he's got a left back that listens to him about where to be anyway. So for me, I'm going to take Stephen Barton's question. Is the Benteke mini revival over? Absolutely not. Because although he didn't score in this game, you don't get the first goal without Benteke. Similarly, we don't get the goal against Leicester, even though Benteke didn't touch it in that move. We don't score it without him being where he is. I think he's playing like a proper striker at the moment. And it's not always going to be about goals for Benteke. Great that he got the three that he did. But obviously now it's 3-6. People are talking about potentially that revival being over. Don't see it myself. Stephen also asked a question about PVA and Mitchell, asking if PVA should play in front of Mitchell on the left as a left wing. No, I don't want to say it. I mean, I understand why people say it. Not a criticism at all, but PVA is not a left winger, despite what people say, because if he was a left winger, people would play him on the left wing. He's never been played there. We've never picked him there. And is he better than Schlupp on the left wing? No. Is he better than Eze on the left wing? No. Is he better than Wilfried Zaha on the left wing? Absolutely not. So I don't see why you'd do it. You'd just be shoehorning a player in who basically should be playing their current position better. That's my view on that. And yeah, I have
imagine
to say,
Max Meyer's reaction as well.
Absolutely right. Alex, you can take this last one as well. I know it's again about Mitchell. So I'll tell you what, we'll bring you in. Actually, no, you can
PVA.
Talk about
Mitchell. I was going to talk about PVA, actually. I wonder if we will cut our losses on PVA in terms of like this January, because I know he was linked with a move, wasn't he, back to Holland. He was linked to PSV in the summer. So I wonder if they might think, you know, why not? Let's just get a bit of cash for him. I don't know how long's left on his contract. Is it 18 months?
No, he's out of contract at the end of the season.
Oh, so there we go. So yeah. I wonder if they might cash in on PVA, because, you know, there was interest in the summer, and the fact that he's not playing now, I wonder, someone like that in terms of his age as well, and he probably wants to be in the Euro squad as well for the Dutch national team. So I wonder if there is something there that might happen in January.
Yeah, I've got to say that this is one of the problems with the club leaving these contracts as long as they have. All the power's with him now. Is it that tough for him to just play out the season and then take his pick of a move? I think we're going to have to work very, very hard to get anything for him to agree.
Yeah, of course.
Unless someone massive comes along and wants to buy him, you know, and that's the move he wants anyway. But I think, you know, all the cards are really with him. And I don't think he's going to sign, even if we want to keep him. And I'm not sure. The only reason I can see for wanting to keep him is that it costs money to replace him. And that's the only real thing there. So, look, we've got to end the show by talking about the probably the biggest part of the off-field news ahead of the game and indeed after the game. So I don't want to dwell a tremendous amount of time on it. Loads of contact in from people. Stephen Barton asking, please discuss Lucas starting despite the reported breach of guidelines and Roy's post-match comments. Did he say he values 3 points over guidelines desired to save lives, or have I misunderstood? I'll come back to that in a sec. Ebo also saying he can't ignore Luca and his disregard for the COVID rules. Played well today, but should not be on the pitch after that. Absolute stupidity from someone who's supposed to be a leader. Dillman's got in touch and you know, he's given the other angle of it, which I think is what we need to talk around as well, which is, could it just simply be a case of Palace waiting for a full explanation, innocent until proven guilty, given the importance of the game as highlighted by so many fans, full focus on the game and then deal with Luca after? And I think that's probably the explanation that you'd go with, in the fact that the club would have done all the preparation with Luca playing there ahead of the game. But to me, it really does leave a sour taste in the mouth. But what I'm going to say, and I'll let you guys talk after this, but what I'm just going to say on it is, for Roy to say what he did after the match, I think perhaps gives a real indication as to what might be going on there. And I can only speculate. I don't know anything. But Roy's comments have been really consistent around COVID rules, right? He's been really sensible. He's been really clear. And in most of the post-match stuff that you saw, he condemned Luca and said the club would deal with it internally. It was only really the specific time that he got kind of pushed and got on the defensive that he said some comments that seemed odd in isolation, basically saying that I don't think fans would care, that they would see the match as more important. And that seemed really odd. And the only thing I could think of when I was talking with DR on the watch along is that there's something that we don't know about that situation. Now, that could be that Luca had basically made it clear that he was going to do that, which would seem a really, really odd thing to do, because I don't think the club would sanction it. Or there's an element going on that if you punish Luca, potentially you need to punish other players if other players did it. And I think we're probably all sensible and adult enough to have expected that Luca's decision was something that was highlighted in an Instagram post. But I dare say throughout the entire footballing world, there's been loads of unreported cases of people doing that, because they are in this bubble. They get regular tests as to whether or not they have COVID. So it's the kind of justification human beings use to do things that they shouldn't. And, you know, I think we've got to be careful not to be too hypocritical. I'm sure there's plenty of people who are up in arms about it who themselves technically have probably breached COVID guidelines. But my overriding feeling is I don't think he should have played. I don't think it's an issue over captaincy. I don't think he should have played. And you cannot, under any circumstances, excuse the stupidity, especially with a manager who's 73 years old, and especially with games being called off left, right and centre, including the Fulham matches where, you know, Mitrovic is playing. So that's my long diatribe on it. Alex, then Mike?
Yeah, well, what I was going to say, he's in such a privileged situation, isn't he? The fact that he's got the benefit and the luxury of regular testing. He's got the luxury of having the support of the club, you know, luxury as well of having money, you know, in terms of having his livelihood still. And if you compare that to some fans, you know, lots of people have lost their livelihoods because of this crisis and this pandemic. And the fact that, you know, the fact that he, as a captain of the club, does that, it's shameful, really. I'm really embarrassed. You know, I've always, you know, I gave him the benefit of doubt, you know, when there were rumours of his breaches in the summertime, I think it was, at the beginning of the season. But this is inexcusable. It's a kick in the teeth, really, because, you know, I always stood up to Luca and I always thought he was a leader for us and someone that, you know, leads by example. But the fact that, you know, he's put two fingers up to the rules and all the regulations in place, it makes me a bit upset, really, because, you know, footballers have got it easy. They've got it easier than other professions. You see the cricket players, they're stuck in these bio bubbles for months on end. They're not seeing their family and friends. These footballers are able to see their family, you know, straight after training, straight after the game. You know, oh, okay, I know they'll be travelling from game to game, but it's not as strict and as rigid as someone like a cricket bubble or other sports. So yeah, it just makes me disappointed, really. I'm a bit upset by the whole situation, and I feel that, you know, his captaincy should be under, you know, scrutiny. I don't see how you can have someone like that, especially, you know, look at the situation London's in at the moment with all the regulations and the fact that lots of people, you know, are dying from this like horrible disease. And the fact that he can just think that he's above the rules, it's just not right. Not right to me at all.
I mean, all I can add, you've covered everything, really. Sometimes Roy gets pushed into a corner and he sees the red mist and you kind of know that he doesn't mean what he's saying. And I think that is one of the very small amount of faults in his public relations skills. Obviously, he did it for England and he's never been forgiven. Let's see what happens. If the club do nothing and don't mention it again and it doesn't come up in the interviews like it hasn't, you know, they made sure it didn't on the site, then let's look at it again in a week. I'd imagine that it probably will, and he's just on borrowed time at the moment.
It's just crazy, isn't it? Because what happened with Fulham, didn't it? With Fulham, obviously, the game getting called off. And you'd think PR-wise, that's not a great look to be seen with Mitrovic as well. I know it's bad enough breaking the rules, but as well with someone whose club's been affected heavily by COVID, who's had their match called off tomorrow, the fact that it's complete disregard, it's a disgrace. Absolutely disgraceful.
But look, this is the problem, right? And this, you know, we can't go on too long. But this is the problem, in my view, is that we're dealing with something that was stupidly posted to Instagram. It doesn't excuse it, but it's something that people are aware of. The problem really comes with how do you only deal with somebody because they were caught out publicly? What if? And I'm not saying this is the case, but what if there's more people at Palace who the club are aware breached the guidelines? What if that's the case? Then, because you have to deal even-handedly with everybody. I don't expect, other than probably a public statement of apology, I don't expect there to be any more said than that. I think it would be a case of Luca will probably put a statement out that says, you know, I acted incorrectly. It was a stupid thing to do. It was a spur-of-the-moment decision. Shouldn't have done it. I apologise to everybody. But I genuinely feel it's a can of worms if you start punishing the only people who got caught out. Because I firmly believe it's much more widespread than just Luka Milivojevic.
But he's done it twice, Chris. He's done it twice now.
Well, has it? Did he?
Well, that was a rumour. If he has done it, this could be the same time.
There is no evidence. I mean, he got COVID twice, didn't
he? Didn't he go back to Serbia? Didn't he go back to Serbia with something that wasn't actually sanctioned by the club to go make a trip back to? So that was a rumour.
I thought he was on international duty. That's when he got COVID. I don't believe there was another incident. But you know, even if there was, but you know, that's obviously really bad. But that, you know, it's not a double jeopardy situation, is it? It's the simple truth is, you know, in this scenario, we can't talk about rumours and whether or not they were true. We can talk about what factually happened, and what factually happened is that he got caught out over New Year. But like, I'm just saying that there's more to it. It's not black and white. None of these things ever are. The only black and white part is he did something extremely wrong that people are quite rightly offended about. But, you know, I suppose it's very easy for us to say, I just put it this way. If it wasn't him, right, if it wasn't a player who's under a lot of scrutiny and pressure, and there's a lot of people out there who don't think he should be playing, who think he's been in poor form for a long time. There's a lot of people who don't think he's the best captain for Palace, and lots of people talking about others stepping in. But if it wasn't him, if it was, let's say it was Eze, let's say it was Wilf, I don't think for one second there'd be anywhere near the same level of you know, vitriol that's been aimed in his direction. And that's the problem. That's the why I say be careful about hypocrisy. But none of what I've said there excuses any of it. I think the right thing to do is apologise. But let's not demonise people for being idiots. You know, we don't revere footballers for their intelligence and their self awareness. We revere them for their talent on the pitch. And I think as Mike said, in a kind of overly defensive, backed into a corner kind of way, I suspect that's really what Roy was getting at, in that, you know, he didn't expect people to be that angry, and given the fact that the club seemed to have prioritised the results over some action. But look, we'll see what happens. From my opinion, I want to see a proper apology, but that's all I really want to see. Whether or not his captaincy is under threat, that's for others to think about. I can't really say too much there. Anyway, it's perhaps something that we could have talked about longer with more detail, and hopefully no one's offended by anything that we've said. We're sort of speaking off the cuff as well. None of that was prepared. So if I've said anything that the people think's out of order, just get in touch, let us know. And if I've spoken out of turn, I apologise. It's certainly not what I was aiming for. We do, absolutely, all three of us, I'm sure you're clear, do condemn what was done there, and we're clear that it was wrong, especially given how much we all have to suffer in the current circumstances.
I did spend Christmas Day on my own, so I totally get it. Yeah,
same. Yeah, having to have a Zoom call with the family, the only Christmas Day I've ever spent on my own. I'm sure that's the same for many, many people. I couldn't even find the spider in my living room for company. I don't know where it went. So that's how bad it was for me. But there you go. Bad times. Anyway, that's everything for you this week. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to everybody who got in touch with the show today, whether we used your message or not. It does really help us develop the plan for the show every week. So please engage with our sponsors. That's Pitch Sport Football and Manscaped. They support us so we can keep this show free for everyone. So please support them. Like, follow, subscribe on our social accounts. Preview team will be back for a look ahead to Friday night's trip to Molineux as Palace face Wolves in the FA Cup. And until next time, come on, you Palace.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by pitchdmm.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.